This is Wheel Bearings episode 445, and I am Sam Apual Samet from Telemetry.
And I am Nicole Wakelin from Test Miles and Top Speed.
And I am Roberto Baldwin from SAE International.
And I can't believe poor Sam still sounds sick.
I know. I'm feeling much better than I was the last time we recorded, but
okay.
My voice is still a little screwed up.
He's still got that grumbly thing.
Yep. Going for that sound.
Batman.
Yeah. Nicole,
yes.
What'd you drive?
I had the 2026 Kia K4.
Kia.
That's how they say it in the UK. I've heard it said both ways. Kia K4 hatchback GT line in, I think it's habanero yellow. I should have looked. It says HB yellow on my key tag. And I'm like, wait, that's not a color. I think it's that really like goldish,
Happy
birthday yellow in happy birthday yellow. I mean, it would fit. It's a very bright, like. In fact, we went out for breakfast this morning and we came back out to the parking lot. It was kind of empty when we got there and it was full when we came out. And Russell's like, I don't know which car is ours. I'm like, how do you not remember which car we arrived in when it was that color? Like, it's a sea of like dark browns or dark, you know, colors. And I'm like, and there's this like boom, boom, glowing in the corner of the parking lot. It's very bright. It's actually kind of cool. I sort of like, have you guys seen the color? You know what I'm talking about?
I have.
I'm looking at it. I think it's a top art for their media site for the K4.
Is it? Let's see. I'll have to look if that's because it's bright. Let's see. K4 hatchback. I'm going to look. That's it. That is, in fact, it. That bright, bright. And it's more yellowy. It looks more like sort of gold. It's tamer in this image than it is in real life.
It says sparkling yellow on the website.
What does HB mean?
Happy birthday.
Hatchback.
Oh, no, wait. That's exactly what it is. They put HB yellow all in color, but its body is empty. So they have accidentally... Sparkling yellow, is that what it is?
That's what the website calls it. I think habanero. Well, I don't know. Can you get yellow habaneros?
No,
I don't know. Maybe because
like
it was spicy. See, it would have worked for me, that name. We're calling it Happy Birthday Yellow.
It's Happy Birthday
Yellow. So the Kia K4 hatchback GT line in Happy Birthday Yellow, which is very bright.
Yeah.
So this is the hatchback version of the K4. Basically, it looks very different. I think the K4, regular K4, people either loved or hated the design on that. I think you were you a hater, Robbie? Am I remembering right that you hated it?
No, I didn't hate it. I was just like, it's just like from the... Once you get past the B column, you're like, wait, what's going on?
So you didn't love it.
I didn't love it. This I really like.
See? So this most people really like the look of. I was okay with the K4 sedan, but I do like the look of the hatchback better. It has really good lines. It just is an attractive car. And it's not this tiny, tiny little hatchback. It's actually pretty roomy. So when Russ is riding around in it, like he's 6'3", I'm like, how do you... And I noticed a lot of times smaller cars like this, tall guys, you sit in the front seat and your knees are hitting like the center console in the door. Like you can't get enough seat room to let your legs be straight. He was comfortable in this. So that's saying something for a guy who's tall and a car that's small. So there's only three trims in this: EX, GT line, and GT line turbo. The GT line just has a 2-liter four cylinder with 147 horsepower, 132 pound feet. The turbo ups all that. 190 horsepower, 195 pound-feet. So the turbo is the more fun. I had the GT line, but the funny thing is, when I first got in, I didn't look to see which trim I had. I just hopped in it and drove, and I'm like, this is actually pretty nice. So even not the turbo, it was a pretty responsive little vehicle. 47 horsepower doesn't sound like a lot, but it was plenty.
It's not.
But it was
my
fine.
My 1990 Honda Civic hatchback, which I... just drove like a madman, had 86 horsepower.
Yeah, but it also weighed about 86 pounds.
Right,
that's true.
Too. But it's still, I thought, like, this wasn't something... Sometimes when you... I feel like when they have these two, you know, you've got the normal, naturally aspirated engine, and then you have the turbo. The turbo's the fun one, and the naturally aspirated is not just less fun, it's boring. Like, they really are like, well, if you hate life, drive this one. Otherwise, get our more expensive turbo trim. You could get the regular one in this and be like, hey, I still love life. It's still fun to drive. So I thought that was really important to point out, because I feel like that's normally not the case. When there's the turbo's the good one, the other one is boring. This was still fun to drive. I enjoyed it. We took it into Boston. We took it on a road trip. It was a little bit This car is a little bit harsh over rough surfaces, and it has a little bit of noise to it. Like the wind noise and the road noise, you hear a little bit, but I think that's a function of it being an affordable car. One of the things they sort of draw back on is all the stuff they do to make it. Like luxury cars are super serene and quiet for a reason, and they're expensive to make that way. It takes a lot of extra sound deadening and different things to make it quiet, acoustic glass, all these things. You don't have as much.
And tire sidewalls are more than half an inch tall.
Exactly. So this one, but the GT line, so the pricing on this car starts at $24,990. That's cheap. Then it goes, the GT line is $25,990 and the GT line turbo is $28,890. So all three trims, even the turbo, are under 30 grand, which makes this an incredibly affordable option for a car that is still
by 2026 standards.
But right, not once upon a time, but today. That is a deal today. Do you want to take a guess on destination based on what I can see right now? Tomorrow morning it could change, as we all know. Take a guess, gentlemen.
13.
14.
Wow. Robbie was spot on. 13 is what I have.
Oh, was it really?
Yeah. So 1300.
I just had this thing a few weeks ago.
Oh, and it was what? It was 14?
No, well, I don't know. I don't remember because I didn't cheat and go back and look at the Monroney.
All right. Oh, thanks for not cheating, Sam.
He's such an honest soul.
Or at least I didn't say I cheated.
Or you didn't say, I didn't see his eyes shift down to look at a paper or anything. So you know, this is, even with that destination fee, it's still an affordable car, which is really kind of nice. And it's a hatchback. Hatchbacks are so cool. I wish we had more of them. They are so versatile. They give you so much flexibility to carry people comfortably in the back and to have little cargo room, which is what you need. 90% of the time, you just need a small amount of cargo room in the back of your car. But when you have the weird thing, the big thing, the bulky thing, or just need more in general, you still have that without having to have a giant SUV. I love hatchbacks. I think they're fantastic.
Americans need to get over themselves and get with
please
hatchbacks.
Please do this more.
My friends had a Mini, and then they had a child. And we lived in a house behind a house in San Francisco. And mm-hmm. the landlords, the owners, were a really nice couple. And they had a child as well. And they had this giant SUV. And I remember one of the owners, he went to my friend. He's like, well, you know, if now you're going to have to get an SUV. Their child is like a little toddler. It's like not like, and for a moment, my friend's like, yeah, I'm going to have to get an SUV. And he's like, wait, why? Why?
It's like you've had a child.
The Mini
you
is
haven't
fine.
Bought an elephant, you know?
We could still fit the kid in the back of the Mini.
Right? So, and that's the thing. Like, this is still a really versatile car. And the cargo room behind the rear seats is about 22 cubic feet. It's 59 when you fold the seats down. That's a lot. That's a lot of room. So you really do have a ton of room in this. And for standard equipment, you have like a 12.3-inch touchscreen digital instrument cluster. Becomes like a panoramic dealio on higher trims. Wireless smartphones for connectivity for the CarPlay and Android Auto. You get charging ports up front. You have wireless charging. The GT line that I was driving, it's actually really cool inside of mine. It had like heated seats, heated steering wheel. It's a really nice car, and it was fun to drive. It truly was a fun little thing to drive. I was driving it quite a bit in Boston yesterday, and it is a great little city car because it's small enough that you can get in and out of crazy parking garages. And when I was in the parking garage at the Prudential Center, which has one of those roofs, ceilings, that looks like it's going to clip your car, and all the pipes hanging down at various heights. And I know the total, and I'm fine in my little car, but you know that, you know, the lowest height it's giving you is the lowest pipe. When all the pipes seem to be the same,
there's
one that drops,
you're like,
dear God, there was this Ford truck, like an F-150, but it looked higher. So I couldn't see the trim, but it looked high coming towards me. And I'm not even in it. I'm like, oh man, you are just going to make it. You could barely see it. And I'm thinking, now I'm nervous. I'm like, Nicole, you're up to that guy's seat level is the height of your car. Calm down. You're fine in here. But watching him try to come around like corners in the garage because they're so tight. I'm like, give the man some room because he really had to swing it. Meanwhile, I'm like, no problem. So it really is. I really enjoyed this car. I am a fan. of this car. I had said I would recommend this to people. Like, I recommend, you know, you recommend a lot of cars. Like, people ask you cars, but like, I would put this at the top of my list for someone young.
It's got a Nicole seal of approval.
Right. Forget like NHTSA. Forget IHS.
I recommended it just by parking it in my driveway. I didn't even have to tell anyone.
Right. Was this the one that somebody bought because of you? Right.
Yeah.
So I love this car. I'm thinking, and when I did the launch, I thought this is a really great vehicle. Now that I've had it for a week and really driven it, this is really great. Like, this is what young people should be buying, because it's affordable, it's fun to drive, it's great features, you have enough room for you and your friends, you have enough room for your stuff when you move apartments 85 times, you can still
That's
put
exactly
stuff,
what I was going to say.
Right? You can still put
for the
stuff in the back.
37 times you'll move.
Right? So you can fit all your stuff when you're moving around, because that's what you do when you're young. This is one of my top picks. I mean, even if you're not the kid moving around, the young, you know, 20-something, unless you've got a need for some big SUV for some reason,
you don't.
Your K4 hatchback.
I had a show last night with one of the bands, and we had to go up a dirt road to get to this venue. It was very fancy, but you know, it's a dirt road. And I had the BRZ because my wife had the Ioniq 5, and I drove the BRZ up. And when I pulled up, it was a fundraiser. And as soon as I pulled up, the person's like, "Oh, you're with the band." I did not look like I belonged there unless I was in the band. But
one
I
of
drove
these things is not like
dirt
the
road,
other.
And then I had to park in like tall grass, like off a berm, and I was like, man, whatever, BRZ.
You were okay. You didn't get stuck. You didn't die. You were fine. I mean, you just drove in and then you drove out. See?
Even without all-wheel drive. It's got the boxer engine. The boxer engine just makes everything okay.
We've gotten really sold on the notion that in order to survive anything other than perfect flat pavement, need something that has, you know, a 10-inch ground clearance, big
I
knobby
need a G-wagon.
Tires, right? Like, if, like you look at a mud puddle, it's like,
you know,
I can't get
fair,
through that puddle.
I do live in Southeast Michigan.
And the
That's
potholes
true.
Are that big.
Yes. I had a Michigan-sized pothole like 2 days ago. I was like, where the hell did that come from? Oh, and then the whole time I was like, just like Michigan, man.
It's
one
like
pothole,
Michigan.
That's how it starts.
It's the same thing here. Like, especially right now, because we're having the rain. That's what kills it. You have rain. You think, oh, it's warm. Spring is here. And the Mother Nature's like, freezes. It gets down to 20. And the pavement just comes out in literal chunks of pavement, and then you have a giant pothole. There is a pothole on the main road nearest our house that surprised everybody. It surprised the whole town that drives this road. Do you know how I know?
It was like a birthday pothole. It was like just
how
jumped out.
I know
Surprise!
Are the number of hubcaps and bits and pieces of things that are now next to the pothole. I'm like, oh.
If you have hubcaps on your car, just take them off.
I know.
Steely's always look, it always looks right? cooler with the weird Steely's that are either sometimes they're painted black,
and you
sometimes
can
they're
see,
just
and then you also see the splash. It's not water. It looks like dirt. It's not dirt. It's bits of the paved road that you were. It's just like a pavement little smorgasbord around the entire pothole. So, but even with that, you know what? You could get through it in your BRZ. Just don't nail it. Like, look where
don't
you're going.
Nail. Yeah, just right? look where you Yeah.
So I this is like, I'm looking at this and anyway, like, I really
K4.
Love this car. I mean, I love the K4.
This is why, you know, when we bought our Civic, almost 10 years ago now, you know, we went for the hatchback instead of the sedan because, we had, prior to that, we'd had a couple of station wagons and we couldn't find a wagon that we liked and could afford. And the hatchback is kind of like the next best thing to a station wagon. Because you've got that big opening, you know, so it drives like a car, but you have that big opening. So when you do need to put something large in there, you just fold that back seat down. You can put big stuff in there, like bales of straw, you know, it fits.
Mulch.
Lots
the
of mulch.
You can put the mulch in there.
I had to buy I had some wood to finish some shelves and a box I'm working on. Just went through it. Through the back of the Ioniq 5, which is just a giant hatchback, really.
Yeah.
Right, seriously.
Just a really big hatchback that everyone thinks is smaller than it is. And I have to explain to them, like, no, it's really big. They're like, I don't know. I got tall people. I'm like, do you know how tall I am, right?
Like, they say that you're taller than me. You know, are you doing, like, the March Madness thing and bringing basketball players with you? What's happening?
Well, you know, I mean, the Ioniq 5, you know, that shape, you know, is so very reminiscent of, like, the early VW Golfs, and those were small cars, and it's got, you know, very similar proportions to that, except and it's all been scaled up by 30%.
Yeah. I think the wheelbase is longer than the Lucid Air. Hold on, I'm gonna look that up. Someone at Lucid told me that.
It might be. Yeah, so it you're right. It does look smaller than it is. All right. Anything else on the K4 hatchback?
No, that's it on the K4 hatchback. I love it. Go buy one. I highly recommend it. I'd buy that before the K4.
The Ioniq 5's wheelbase is 1.5 inches longer than the Lucid Air.
There you go.
But if you look at a Lucid Air and Ioniq 5 next to each other, you'll be like, no, there's no way.
Yeah.
It's just the way the vehicles are proportioned.
Impossible.
Yeah.
It's funny what you can do with visual cues like that.
I know with the iX, people weren't buying it because they thought it was the size of the X3 instead of a X5.
Mm-hmm.
So people didn't realize it was as big as it was. It was the big BMW. Mm-hmm. And so they weren't, you know, so they had the, I can't say that. I can say that.
Save yourself. Don't break an embargo.
It's more of an off of record thing. There's a visual. There are visuals that came into just because the wheels are pushed so far out. So it looks like a smaller car. It's a trick.
All right. Well, I had the Infiniti QX60 Sport all wheel drive. So this is, you know, I guess Infiniti's got like four models left, all crossovers now. And I think the QX50 and QX55 are going away soon, but they'll be replaced by the QX65, which is basically a QX60 with the back of the roof sliced off to make it into a quote unquote coupe.
Which again, what's the point? It's if you're getting an SUV.
Yeah.
You just removed a bunch of space.
Remove the SUV-ness from it.
I know. But the QX60 doesn't do that. The QX60 has all the SUV space. It's a three-row. It is basically Infiniti's version of the Pathfinder. So it is a much nicer, more luxurious-feeling Pathfinder. When they did a refresh on it, was it last year or the year before? They dropped the V6 engine that was in there. Used to be a V6 and a 9-speed automatic. They dropped the V6, replaced it with the 2-liter variable compression turbo 4-cylinder, which is, you know, it's fine. When they first announced that thing, we've talked about this before, but when they first announced it, you know, they said, oh, this is going to have the performance of a V6, but much better fuel economy. Yeah, not so much. You know, I averaged, I think, 21 miles per gallon with it, which is not exceptional. And also, it doesn't feel, compared to a lot of other 2-liter turbo 4-cylinders, it doesn't feel as strong as most of those, which is weird. You would think with that variable compression system in there, it added a lot of complexity to the engine, didn't really give you all the performance and fuel economy that it promised, but they continue to build them anyway. So it's a decent engine. Let's see, it's 268 horsepower, 286 pounds feet of torque, and this is where this engine differs from most other 2-liter turbos. The peak torque comes at 4,400 RPM. Most of these types of engines, you know, they typically have a peak torque that, you know, somewhere between 1,800 to 2,000 RPM up to like 4,500 RPM, they have that peak torque. This one doesn't have as much low-end torque as you would expect, which is, you know, it's for a vehicle this size, it doesn't feel as strong as you would expect. Apart from that, though, the rest of the vehicle is very nice. You know, the interior is really nice. The exterior design, it's a sharp looking 3-row crossover. The one that I had, the Sport, was finished in all black, except for like the lights and the backlit Infiniti grille. The wheels, the black wheels had these little strips of chrome, they're kind of like five multi-spoke spokes, And then in between those, there's a little strip of chrome around the edge. So you got just enough chrome on there so that when you do hit a curb, you will notice it. So there's that. You know, the when they did the refresh, they gave it the new Android-based infotainment system. So it's got all that, but it also still has CarPlay and Android Auto support. So you still have full support for Google Maps, Google Assistant built in. You can also hook up your phone and use that as well. What else? You know, it's generally a nice vehicle. It's got some nice touches in it. The second row seats, we've talked about this before on the Pathfinder and the QX60. When you have a car seat mounted in the second row seats and you go to tilt the seat forward, the whole seat tilts up from the forward edge and tilts forward. So if somebody wants to get into the third row, you don't have to take the car seat out to get access to the third row. The whole thing just tilts up together. So that makes it a little easier to actually use the third row. The third row, you know, is not huge, but I can sit back there, you know, reasonably comfortably. I wouldn't want to take a long road trip in it, but it's, you know, it's fine. It's got enough cargo space in the back for, you know, for multiple carry-on bags. So it's handy in that respect. Let's see, where to go here. Just looking for the rear. Yeah. So, the interior of the blue one or this sport version, is a mix of black and dark blue. So like the seating surfaces are dark blue and there's some dark blue accents on the doors and across the dashboard, which, you know, gives it breaks it up a little bit. The car I'll talk about next week is, Genesis, GV80 Coupe Darth Vader edition, which does not do that. that one's all black. So with even with the third row seats up, you still have a decent amount of cargo space behind the third row. Third row seats folded down, you can put lots of really big stuff in there. You can also fold down the second row seats flat. So it's, you know, it's a nice vehicle. The pricing on this one, grand total came to $64,380, and the only option on it was the mineral black paint is what they call it. Everything else was standard on here. You want to guess at the destination charge?
$19.95. $15.
Robbie was off by just $5.
Wow.
It's $14.95.
Well done, you.
That's what happens when you're really tired because you had a very busy day. Everything else just fades away to the all the distractions fade away because you're exhausted.
So that's the 2026 Infiniti QX60 Sport All-Wheel Drive.
Did you know you can support Wheel Bearings directly? Head to patreon.com/wheelbearingsmedia and you can become a patron today. Your contributions will help fund the platforms and tools we use to bring the podcast to you. And exclusives and improvements are already on the way thanks to your generosity. So if you want to be part of an automotive podcast like no other, head to patreon.com/wheelbearingsmedia.
We've updated the Wheel Bearings merch store, and now there's a whole bunch of new choices, new colors, new styles, t-shirts, sweatshirts, hoodies, hats, mugs, travel mugs, stickers, aprons, tote bags, you name it. You can get your Wheel Bearings merch at shop.wheelbearings.media. Go check it out. That's shop.wheelbearings.media. All right, let's move on to the new BMW i3. So reviving a name, but it's not the i3 that we got used to in the 2010s, which was this little miniature upright carbon fiber bodied EV, relatively short range EV, that was designed as an urban city car. This is more like the next generation of the BMW 3 Series, except it's all electric and it's based on the same Neue Klasse platform as the iX3. What do you guys think of this thing?
It's
looks good. What do you think?
It looks good. It's BMW. The Neue Klasse 800, you know, the promise of the Neue Klasse was an 800 volt architecture. It charges really quick, goes really far, and they pulled it off. So, you know, even with their 400 volt systems, they were doing a pretty good job. Now they're really going. BMW is going all in, and they are not messing around.
Yeah. Yeah, I think, you know, what, at least on the outside, what they've done with this, you know, with the design, you know, they've gone away from the giant, enormous kidney grills. Apparently, you know, they're going to be discontinuing the i4 from the lineup sometime in the near future. Mendes is going to replace it, at least for now. Who knows, maybe we'll get something more like the i4 again at some point in the not too distant future. But this, you know, I like the exterior design of this, especially what they've done with the front. You know, we've actually kind of seen this car now multiple times in concept form over the last 5 years. You know, there was the version that they showed at CES a few years ago where the exterior was all covered in color e-ink. Remember that one?
Oh, yeah.
The Vision D. And so you could change the exterior color. None of that on this one. But they've had a couple of different concept versions of this that were pretty close to the final design. So I like the look. I'm less convinced about the interior.
Yeah,
there's elements of the interior design that, I like the, you know, what they've done. You know, they've got this, essentially it is a heads up display across the base of the windshield. So there's no traditional instrument cluster, but right all the way along the base of the windshield, there's this heads up display, which is pretty cool. You know, so you can see all your stuff there right in front of you. It's above the steering wheel. Mm-hmm. You know, so
it's
a combination.
And it looks like they squished the steering wheel a little bit so you'll actually be able to see it. You know how they do the rounded and it cuts. It looks like it shouldn't cut in regardless of how tall you are, kind of thing.
They went too hard on that steering wheel. That's all I'm going to.
There's a lot happening there.
Settle down.
Yeah.
Steering wheel, too hard. Pull it back. Pull it back 20%.
Wow. There's a lot happening on that steering wheel.
Went really hard on the steering wheel.
And so much chrome. Oh, my God. Okay.
What do you think of the trapezoidal center screen?
I'm fine with that.
Okay with the center screen. Let me go back to it. Flip. I'm okay with that.
Yeah, that's
the little crookedness.
Yeah.
I mean, the thing is,
trapezoids are cool, Sam.
There's so many. The big screens like that do make cars look very boxy. Like when they're just plopped there and they don't have like an instrument cluster that comes off of it to give it some.
It just
softness,
looks like an iPad shoved in the
right?
car.
Right. Like when you have it move into like when it's two screens in one display, it's a little bit more softer. When it's just like screen, you're kind of like and that is a big screen. So I don't know. Maybe doing that makes it look a little less in your face. You don't like it, Sam? I sense that Sam doesn't like
actually,
it.
Actually, I'm actually okay with the trapezoidal screen. That's not the thing that I have a complaint about.
What's the thing? I'm like looking through all the interior pictures.
There's one missing detail.
No, what
is it?
What
vents?
Are the vents in it?
It sure looks that way.
Wait, I'm looking real close at the pictures with the dashboard now.
Didn't people just go drive this?
They didn't drive it. I think they just saw it.
Oh, gosh. I'm so glad I didn't go to that.
I don't think it was a drive.
That's how I just got uninvited from 12 things. They're like, if you're not going to come, you don't want to come look at our things.
I think you're right.
It looks like there's no
I don't see any
vents.
Little levers to manually move the vents.
Nope.
Man, and BMW, fix the hideous grill and have an actually decent front to your car. And then you
so
remove
close.
The vents. Was so excited. And then?
Then they broke it. It's that one little detail.
It's one thing. Automakers are like high school. Like businesses are like high school. If one kid does it and everyone thinks it's cool, then all the kids do it. Doesn't matter if it's cool or not in reality.
Oh, the kids are doing it.
Yeah, businesses are the exact same way. They're like, oh, well, they're not doing without. They're doing without vents. That must be what people want.
I too must do this.
No, that's not what people want. No one's asking for this. You just saw, you know, one automaker do it, and then another automaker did it, and so you said, "Oh, I'll do this." And you're just like, "Yeah." Anyway, just get an old i3; it'll be fine.
Yeah. So Yeah, 463 horsepower, 76 foot-pounds of torque. This thing can move, I think. And, you know, it's the next generation of BMW's electric propulsion system, so it's their sixth generation. You know, it's an evolution of what they have on the current i4 and iX and everything, which is really efficient. And they're promising, I think, 440 miles of electric range on the EPA test, not just on WLTP, but on the EPA test, which is very impressive.
Here's the thing: is that BMW? I remember when they were talking, you know, modular manufacturing after the i3 and the i8, and we're all just like, yeah, whatever, man. Because it just like it felt like it took a while, and then finally, when we drove they dragged us all to Germany to drive the i4 and the iX, we're like, oh my gosh, they did it. They actually pulled it off. And I think it's the same thing with the Neue class. They showed us all the bits, and they kept showing us, you know, fun concepts, you know, like you said, with the e-ink and whatnot. And then at the end of the day, they deliver is what it comes down to. And it looks like they're electrically excited synchronous motors, which is nice. This is the everyone else using permanent magnets. People years ago said there's no way you should use a motor without magnets because you wouldn't get the efficiency or the performance. And BMW is like, nah, we'll figure it out.
Yeah.
And they did.
Yeah.
Every time they did. I was at the, when they shared that news, I wrote my article, I posted it online, and within minutes, I got a text from another automaker asking how they did this. And I'm like, why are you texting me? I don't work at BMW.
go buy one and tear it apart. Figure it out.
Yeah. No, it was crazy. It was like, bling. I'm like, who is this?
Yeah. Oh. 400 kilowatt charging, which, you know, some of the outside of China is some of the best you're going to get anywhere.
Yeah.
So that, you know, this is all on this new architecture that shares with the iX3, and they're also going to be pushing this stuff into a lot of other vehicles over the next couple of years as well. So the next generation X5, there's going to be an electric version of that. That will also utilize this hardware. You know, next generation 5 series and 7 series. I think, you know, BMW was saying this week that while everybody else is panicking and giving up on EVs, BMW saying, yeah, we think we can get to 50% EV sales by 2030.
Yeah, thanks. That's the thing. You just got to commit. You have to be Hyundai.
Go all
you have to be
in and Kia, do it.
You know, BMW. You have to be now, I guess, Toyota and GM. You just got to commit, and you get the sales. It's just, you know, when you don't commit, when you kind of half-ass it, that's when you're, well, things aren't happening the way we hoped. Like, because you're kind of half-assing it. You got to go all in.
Yeah, you got to commit to it. And the key is, you know, it's got to. You know, this is something I used to say in some presentations I did. You know, once you get past the incentive programs, at some point, it's just got to be a better car. And, you know, if it's a better car, people will buy it. And that's what BMW seems to be building now. They're building a better car. You know,
the i4 was better than the gas 4 series.
Yeah. And the nice thing about this one, because, you know, this is not built, unlike the i4, which is built on a flexible architecture that was shared between EV and gas and plug-in hybrid, this is just a pure BEV, which means that, like, when you look in the back seat of this thing, unlike an i4, there's no giant center tunnel for a non-existent drive shaft, because, you know, they use the same floor pan regardless of which powertrain it's got. This nice flat floor, so, you know, you got lots of room in the back seat. Hopefully we get to drive this thing, you know, in the coming months. But you know, this thing looks really, really promising. Apart from the whole vent thing.
Whole vent.
Yeah. All right. Let's move on to another. Actually, I think kind of similarly sized electric sedan, the new 2026 Lexus ES. You know, the ES, you know, never been one of Lexus's most exciting products. But you know, it's generally, you know, since the 1990s, it has been Lexus's second best selling product after the RX. Now the new EX, the new ES for 2026, is launching. The drive program's still over a month away, but they're launching this thing, and it's going to be available two powertrains, either hybrid or battery electric. And they're actually launching the BEV first, which is kind of unusual.
That is a different take. It normally goes the other way around, but
yeah. So the BEVs are going to be hitting dealerships starting in the next few weeks with the ES350e and the ES500e, where the 500 is all-wheel drive, the 350 is front-wheel drive. 307 miles of electric range. It's got a J3400 charging port. Basically, it's all the same hardware that you will find in a Toyota BZ or a Toyota CHR or a Subaru Solterra or a Subaru Uncharted. So same stuff, 221 horsepower, 338 horsepower if you get all-wheel drive. The pricing, the ES350 starts at $47,500 before the destination charge.
This is the one that's cheaper than the hybrid, right?
Yes.
By like $1,500. Is it? Or, yeah. It's $2,000 cheaper than the hybrid.
Wow.
Yeah. Okay.
Why does that happen? Why would that happen? Why would they, what is that, to get people to buy an EV?
I guess, yeah.
Just to like, can you please consider the EV, please?
They're getting sweet deals on the batteries.
Mm.
Yeah, so
like, we're Toyota. We're the number one Toyota, you know, auto manufacturer in the world. If you want to work with us, you're going to have to bring these battery prices down. And they're like, all right. And they're like, boom, now we can sell them cheaper. It's really the battery.
Well, they're also building their own batteries now.
Yeah, see, there you go.
So, yeah, the destination charge is $1,295.
Wow, that's really low.
Yeah.
It's not even really
everything's
low.
Everything's broken with this story. Even, what? Everything's What's happening? Broken.
Even with destination, $48,795 is the starting price for the ES350e. And then the hybrid, when that arrives, the ES350h will start at $50,995. So about $2,000 more.
Dun, dun, dun. So if you want a fancy EV...
It's coming.
Multiple. That's the problem. We got too many fancy EVs, to be honest. But, you know, fancy EV is still an EV.
There's a lot of EVs coming, like, right now. Like, all of a sudden, these EVs. And I'm kind of like, well, it's funny to me where EVs aren't, like, the hotness at the moment, but yet the OEMs are like, we already have this in the pipeline, guys.
Where are we going to make it? But there's the companies that are going all in. They're like, well, we're not stopping now because, you know, they're like, well, this... 3 years. I mean, we have a long-term roadmap. Let's think about like long-term as a company.
Yes, what's going to happen as opposed versus, to right now?
Yeah, I mean, funny thing. I mean, Honda was basically ready to start production on their EVs,
right,
and they canceled.
Yeah,
at the exact wrong time.
Yeah, right as oil prices are, you know,
skyrocketing,
$125 a barrel.
But it depends how long.
Probably
it's
going to $200.
Well, it depends how long the prices stay where they are, you know, because the prices fluctuate. They're not a static thing. You know, they spike and then they come down a little. They never go back down to where they were, but they spike and they come down. They spike and they come down. So I don't know if that's going to be enough to. And because so many people, I think, truly, when the tariffs disappeared, when the incentives disappeared, were like, we got to buy our EV now. Well, we still had, I think, a lot of almost ready EV buyers were like, right now, let's go.
Yeah, and there's that spike, and then there was the lull, and
right?
Now it's going, and now the EV
so
sales are going back up again.
Yeah, but it's like a slow creep. Like, you wonder how you, it's tough. It's tough to figure out whether EVs are the right
call
or
Ioniq
5
not. Is up 6% over last year over year.
Nice.
Yeah,
go Ioniq 5.
If you're still making an EV people want, people are still buying
people
it.
People are going to buy it. Yeah, yeah, there you go.
That's why you see it everywhere, more people buy it.
So, have either of you two ever bought or considered buying a car from Carvana?
I have
no,
not.
Really.
I bought no, one. There was a startup in San Francisco that was BMW had invested in them. Shift, I think it was called. And we bought like two cars from them because they would bring the car to your house and then you could drive it around. If you liked it, you just bought the car on an iPad, essentially. They were used cars. They weren't, you know, so we always buy used. And so we used that for a few times and then it went out of business. And I remember I wrote an article about it and then Carvana was like, hey, we do the same thing. I'm like, you don't bring the car to my house until after I've purchased it.
Yeah, which is a little different. Yeah.
So, you know, Carvana, you know, has gotten kind of famous in the used car business, you know, especially during the early 2020s. You know, they were basically buying up every used car they could get their hands on and almost went bankrupt because they spent so much money buying up all these used cars because, you know, manufacturers couldn't build new cars. So everybody was looking for used cars. And so Carvana tried to buy up as much inventory as they could. Almost went broke. They managed to turn things around. And, you know, they're famous for having these car vending machines outside their showrooms.
That look really cool.
Yeah. Well, apparently Carvana is now starting to sell new cars, too. They have bought a number of Stellantis dealerships in the last 6 months. And so depending on where you are in the country, I went and looked here. You know, I saw the video on TFL. Roman and Andre were talking about it. I tried it here and I went, you know, just went to Carvana. Could not find any new car inventory. But when I turned on the VPN and had it show me as being in Denver, then it showed a bunch of new car inventory from Ram, Jeep, Stellantis, or Dodge, and Alfa Romeo, and Fiat, brand new cars that you could buy. And so this is going to be interesting. You know, if Carvana gets, you know, starts buying up franchises, you know, dealerships from other manufacturers, you know, besides just Stellantis. And, you know, they, you know, using the same approach that they have, you know, they still have the stores open, but you can just go on the Carvana website, shop for a car and do the entire purchase online. And then they'll deliver it to you after you pay for it. And if you've got a trade-in, they'll pick up your trade-in at the same time. So it's, would you consider buying a car through Carvana, a new car?
I want to drive things, but I think most people are like, yeah, I'll just buy it.
I think I'm in the Robbie camp. Because I need to drive it. I couldn't spend the kind of money you spend on a vehicle without knowing if I like it driving it. I would have said that even before I did this, I need to drive that. I can't just like, yeah, sure, it looks cool.
I mean, I think, you know, generally, you know, I think we all agree on that. We would want to drive something before we buy it. Mm-hmm. But then you look at Tesla, you look at Lucid and Rivian and others that are doing direct to consumer sales. And I think there's a lot of consumers out there that say, yeah, no, I'm good with it. I don't need it.
But you can drive a Tesla. I mean, you can go to a few. There's one of their, they don't call them dealerships, showroom near you. You can go and they do have vehicles that you can drive. Like you can go to a Tesla showroom and drive them if you want.
Yeah,
I think a lot of people are fine with just like ordering a car and then they drive it the first time when they get it. I know it's very
I didn't say it was good.
I said it was weird.
I think it might depend. You know, if you had like a 72-hour, you know, full refund policy or something like that, you know, or a 7-day refund policy. You buy it, decide it's not the right fit for you, they come back, pick it up. You know, as long as you haven't done any damage to it and maybe it's less than a certain number of miles, then, you know, they'll take it away. If you had something like that, I think a lot of people would actually be fine with it.
Probably. If you had that, like, if you could just drive it and they said, you know, there's a mileage limit, you can't take it for 5,000 miles while you have it. Just test it out a little bit. Yeah.
So, you know, you can't drive it from New Hampshire to California and back.
Right. Yeah, that's too much.
Yeah. But, you know, if it's, you know, say less than 200 miles or something, or less than 500 miles.
I'm looking at Carvana for used Ioniq 5s because our lease is almost up. And like all the sort of like inexpensive ones all have white interiors. I'm like, man, I got dogs. Come on.
Even if I didn't have white interiors, I'm anti-white interior because I have yet to see a press car with a white or light cream interior that the driver's seat is not blue jean colored.
Yeah.
Because your jeans, like, and it doesn't matter. It could be the cheapest one or the most expensive one. You get that hint of blue, and you can really see it as it starts to wear a little bit, just get a little bit of creasing from use. You can see the creases are white, and around the creases, it's more blue. I'm like, no, I'm not. I wear blue jeans too much, because if that's what happens as a press car with 5 to 10,000 miles, what's it going to look like in a couple of years?
Yeah, I don't understand people who buy cars with white interiors.
It's a beautiful idea.
It's eventual gray. That's what I call
it. It's eventual gray. It's like it's color morphing.
Yeah, but the problem is it's
going to
be gray with hints of blue.
A gray with blue-gray. Is it a feature or a benefit that your car changes colors as you go?
Well, speaking of Stellantis, apparently they have actually officially, although... You know, I think you've been able to do this for a while, but they've officially turned on Tesla supercharging support on Stellantis EVs. They're like the last ones to do it, I think. And you can buy adapters from Stellantis. And they also said that starting with the 2027 Charger, when they start building those, that will be their first model that comes from the factory with a J3400 charging port.
Yay. I mean, that's good. That's a good thing, I guess. Yeah. Everyone's doing that slowly but surely, you know?
I was just looking up Stellantis' EV sales the other day. Last year, they sold 11,400 Wagoneer S's. Mm-hmm. Well, 11,399.
Correct.
and about 7,400 Charger Daytonas. You know, not a huge number of people that are impacted by this yet, but I'm sure that'll change once they finally start selling the Recon.
Yeah, theoretically that should bump
because
their
those are going to fly off the dealers' showrooms, right?
Oh yeah.
Okay.
Reserving opinion for later.
let's talk about scammers and fraudsters. So, remember Trevor Milton?
Yep.
I don't remember him. I'm looking this story
Nicola.
Up.
He was the guy behind Nicola.
Yes.
Yeah. He got charged and convicted and went to prison for committing fraud. And then some guy pardoned him. So he's back out free again. So he's got a new scam. He bought a defunct business jet manufacturer called Cyberjet. They launched this
plane.
But
it's not cyber with a C; it's cyber with an S.
Yes,
like,
correct.
Just in case you choose to Google this.
So you know this is it's not like a Gulfstream, you know, that can fly 6,000-8,000 miles across the country. This is more like a Honda jet. It's a light jet, and when they launched the original SJ30, they sold a grand total of five. Not 500, but five.
Five, like one hand, five.
Yeah. So, Mr. Milton has bought up the remains of Cyberjet, and now he's pitching this thing, as a. It's all about the AI.
It's full aerial autonomy. So does that imply, I'm reading through this, you don't need a pilot at all? I just hop on my plane and say, take me to LA?
Presumably.
I feel like I don't trust that. I also feel like it's not going to happen. But also, even if it did, I feel like I don't trust that. You guys buy that car first or buy that plane first. See how it does for you. You let me know.
Yeah.
Maybe I'll consider one. No. this is never going to happen. This is never going to happen. You know, I don't see how this happens.
Given Trevor Milton's background, I would say this would probably not be a wise investment.
Yeah, you should not give scammers money. But we keep giving
words
scammers
to live
money.
By. Words to I live mean, by. You should not give scammers money.
we still do it. I mean, the what was the guy with the WeWork?
Adam Newman.
Adam Newman, big scammer, and then that fell apart, and then Andreessen Horowitz just gave him money again for some other ridiculous thing of like a year ago.
Yeah.
So yeah, if you're part of the club, you can scam all you want, and you're gonna walk away with a bunch of money. People are gonna walk. Everyone else is gonna be disappointed, and then you're just gonna do it again.
Yeah, I mean, if you're a billionaire investor and you want to throw your money at this guy to set it on fire, go right ahead. But
I feel like I have no sympathy for that person at this point. Like the first time, I would say, like, if this you didn't know and he scammed you, that sucks for you. Maybe you just bought in, right? But like the second time, it's like, hey, want to give me more money? No, I don't. I choose not to give you more money. That would be my position, and I don't know why anybody would give more money. It doesn't make sense.
Yeah. So the other one, who's not necessarily a total scammer, but he's got a mixed history. Is Malcolm Bricklin. So, you know, Bricklin, he's got to be in his 80s now, I think. Yeah, he's had a long history with the auto industry, with trying to bring various products to the North American market. He, of course, his first success came with Subaru. He was the original importer for Subaru into the U.S. And then he convinced the government of Nova Scotia in Canada to build him a factory in Atlantic Canada to build a safety vehicle, is actually what he called it. It wasn't even called a sports car. It was a two-seater, the Bricklin SV1. That lasted about a year and a half before they went belly up. And then he was behind bringing Yugos to America. That didn't go well.
Especially for the people that bought the Yugos.
Yeah. Right. Then back in the late 2000s, he was back again with a couple of other attempted ventures that didn't go anywhere. I actually interviewed the guy at the 2008 Detroit Auto Show, and I'll have a link to that in the show notes. That one was something he called Visionary Vehicles, which was going to bring in some plug-in hybrid vehicles built by Chery in China. That never went anywhere. Now he's back again, this time pitching something called the Bricklin 3EV.
Robbie just summed up my entire feelings right there. Just, you know,
it's just one big sigh.
It's just that I feel like if I just walked, as long as you just, if you have a presentation, like our job as journalists, 90% of our job is just showing up and turning things in on time. That's it. That's really, as long as you can show up, you can turn things on time, and you can create a legible sentence with a noun and a predicate and punctuation at the end.
Don't forget some verbs.
And some verbs in there. Yeah.
If you can do that, boom, you're a writer. That's it. That's really it. I feel like for these type of fellas, if you just show up into a room and you dress the part and you say the words and you have some 3D renderings, that's it. That's all you need to get billions of dollars. And I feel like I've blown it as a...
You have made a mistake, Robbie.
I knew what to be like, hey, I'm going to be a writer. I'm not going to make a lot of money. That's every writer, whenever they sit down, they're like, well, I could do this job or I could do something else, which would be less stressful. Nah, I'm going to keep doing the job where I make less money. Everyone hates me and I work long hours.
So,
in case anyone was wondering what this job was like.
Yeah.
So, in case you didn't guess it from the name, from 3EV, it is an EV and it's a three-wheeler with a single wheel at the rear. because, you know, there's such a huge market for those.
I mean, truly. Yep. No. Why do this again? The why. Is this the companies and things that will never happen portion of the episode?
Yeah.
The things that'll never happen.
Things that will never happen.
Yeah. I don't know. I'm at a complete loss as to why anyone still pays any attention to this guy. Yeah, he's 87 years old. So this thing is supposed to start at $30,000.
Sure it is.
Okay.
But you don't even get all the wheels. You only get three of them.
You're down one wheel. How is it even possible? $5,000,
for a few thousand dollars less, you can get a Bolt with all of the wheels.
Yeah, but the thing is, if you do that, if you put four wheels on it, then you have to certify it as a car, not as a motorcycle.
Oh, my God. Hold on. So I'm looking at this interior photo. That dash cluster is from the Bolt.
Is it?
You're right. It is.
Oh, my gosh.
That is the Bolt dash cluster.
That's awesome.
Original Bolt.
Yeah, I think there's a whole bunch of Bolt pieces in there.
So you can just buy a Bolt. Just buy a Bolt. Don't get this.
Yeah.
And the new Bolt. This is old Bolt.
Yeah.
Would you like an old Bolt that's missing a wheel?
An old Bolt, minus one wheel. Here we go.
And only has two seats instead of four.
Yeah. And has a huge... It's like even the design is sort of... It's very 80s.
It's very 80s Pontiac, actually.
Yes. Pontiac. That's what you...
That grill, as soon as I saw that grill, I'm thinking Pontiac.
With one less wheel.
Even the little V on the front almost looks like the Pontiac V, like from far away.
Yeah.
Yeah, this is some shenanigans. This is just cobbled together shenanigans to get money out of people by an 87. 87? Am I going to have the energy to scam people at 87?
I mean, you know, if you thought you could get away with it. Nah.
I guess.
Apparently some people do. Maybe he's think he's been doing it for so long, people will forget who he was and buy into it.
With visionary vehicles, there were a bunch of dealers that paid up, you know, some amount of money for franchises, and I'm sure he can find some suckers out there that'll pay him something for this.
And this is kind of almost, and it's not Silicon Valley thinking, this is just sort of investor thinking, is that everyone wants to be the person who invested in Uber or invested in Facebook. Again, that's how all these oligarchs, that's how they made all this money. They did PayPal, Uber, and Facebook. They all invested early. Those things took off. They invest in so many stupid things that never take off, but they have so much money. Now they're just gambling with billions of dollars that belong to other people because they made one lucky choice. The end. These are not smarter than smart people. They are very lucky
and,
people.
And in some cases, they are quite dumber than dumb. I think as you get more and more money, you actually become dumber.
Yeah, because no one wants to say no to you. You don't have any. Because everyone who's around you has some sort of financial incentive to say yes to you, to stay on your good side. Whether you work for them or you're a friend who's, you know, sort of being subsidized by their lifestyle, you're a hanger on, you're part of the posse, and so you're not going to say no to these people, and so they get this. Their ego gets more, you know, gets inflated. And then if no one ever pushes back on you, you just turn into a bad person.
All right. So at the opposite end of the scale is Rolls Royce, which has been around for a while, been in business for a long time. And a few years back, their now former CEO said, yep, we're going to go fully electric by the end of 2030. His successor, Chris Brownridge, has said, nope, we're going to keep building V12s for the foreseeable future.
Of course.
Yeah.
I mean, is anybody surprised at this point when they're backpedaling because it's like, wait, we were going to do this. This isn't going to work the way we thought. We've changed our mind. Like, they're all doing it at this point.
Rolls Royce is such a weird thing because they sell like seven cars a year or however many seven cars. It's when I was talking to the, I believe it was the head of design or the head of engineering. Doesn't matter. Over, for, uh, I don't know, some very low, you know, quantity car. They were like, we make like X amount of cars a year. They could all be V16s. It doesn't matter. Most of the people don't even drive their car that we sell them.
Yeah.
They just, they buy it, it sits somewhere, and it's just, you know, and appreciates, and then they sell it again. And like, our carbon footprint is nothing. It's like, it's, you get more carbon.
It's inconsequential.
Yeah, it's inconsequential. You know, the carbon footprint of Toyota's lunch menu is higher than this entire company's, like, you know, vehicle. You know, when you look at Rolls-Royce, like, you sure you're going to put a V12. EVs make more sense. I mean, these luxury vehicles make more sense as EVs because there's no rumble. They put these V12s in, and then they do everything in their power to remove the rumble and the vibration and the sound and everything from that V12 from the passenger.
There's a reason why Rolls-Royces have always had names like Shadow and Spectre and Ghost, you know, because they, like you said, they try and make them as quiet as possible. So what difference does it make if it's got a V12 or an electric engine, electric motor? It's irrelevant.
At the end of the day, they could tell people that it has a V12 and put an electric motor in, because the people who are buying this are not driving it.
Yeah.
This is like, you know, people who buy S-classes, like, oh yeah, sometimes people get driven around. I'm like, yeah, the executives would. But if you're buying a Rolls Royce, you're not buying it to drive it. You're buying it to get driven around town. The only
like a Dawn or a Spectre, because they're two doors.
Oh yeah, yeah, there's that. But you know, for the most part, you're just sitting in the back, and you're like, oh, this is nice and quiet. Wouldn't even know. You're like, yeah, we're delivering your V12, and then you go to the driver's like, hey, it's an EV. Don't tell them. Once in a while, just go vroom.
It just has a big V12 shaped case that has an electric motor in the bottom of it.
Yeah, it's no one needs it. It's just like a facade.
And that has fake exhaust sounds coming out the back.
Vroom.
Very, very quiet fake exhaust sounds.
Yeah, you just put an exhaust thing, you put a little speaker there. Boom. No one's going to know. It's like Hemi. It's the Hemi thing. You could tell Stellantis could say everything has a Hemi, and they just put like a little speaker in the back of the car. No one's opening the hood on their vehicles anymore.
Yeah. All right.
Yeah.
And then finally, Corvette is Chevrolet's apparently going to bring out yet another variant of the Corvette for 2027. Yeah, a new Grand Sport, which apparently they're going to get a larger engine. So the 6.2 liter V8, just not enough. So they're apparently going to punch it out to 6.7 and give it an extra 30 to 50 horsepower.
Okay.
Yeah.
I mean, it's not like it needed a lot more, but I guess you're buying a Corvette, you just want all the power you can possibly get. So that's a good thing, right?
When this news came out, 401ks all over the world screamed. They're like, no.
Like, no, don't take it out right now. Wait. Yeah.
Then we've got a couple of listeners and a couple of listener messages. First up from Mark L. Mark wrote in saying, I'm looking at buying a Honda Ridgeline and I've gone down the rabbit hole, also known as YouTube. After some mind-numbing videos, I've seen a few claiming that the 2027 model will have some updates. Both the interior and exterior do look dated, and 2027 is supposed to improve both. That being said, a couple of reviews have said there's a good chance of a Type R Ridgeline in the pipeline. Have any of you heard anything on this?
No.
No. I don't think there's ever going to be a Type R Ridgeline.
No.
That is not Honda's MO. That is a GM MO. Let's just make everything fast.
Yeah, I don't see that. I can't imagine that. Could it happen? Sure. Any expectation? Zero.
No, not going to happen. Even the Ridgeline redesign, that's actually not coming till probably next year as a 2028 model, not as a 27.
Mm-hmm. Cause they just updated like 3 years ago, four.
They did a refresh a couple of years ago. Yeah.
They did the exterior refresh a few years ago. This is the vehicle that my wife got into, and she's like, "Oh, is this an EV?" I'm all, "No." She's like, "What's the point?"
I liked the Ridgeline when it still had, I don't want to say winglets. That's not it. That's an airplane.
The flying buttresses?
The buttresses. Thank you. I had winglets in my head. I'm like, no, wrong kind of vehicle. Yeah. I like those.
But it makes it harder to, like, it looks less like a real truck. I think that's what people, it makes, turns people off.
It wasn't truck-like enough?
Yeah, I mean, when they did the second gen, one of the things they changed was, you know, they wanted to make it look more truck-like. And so, when you look at, you know, you look at most pickup trucks, they have a separate cab and bed. And, you know, it's two separate pieces. So on the new Ridgeline, on the current generation Ridgeline, what they did was, it's actually still a unibody, just like the first generation was, but they put a groove in the metal and put a rubber strip in there so that it looks like the cab and bed are separate, but it's actually all one. If you pull out that rubber strip, you can see it's just one piece of metal underneath there.
It's a trick.
Yeah.
It's a trick.
It's one of those visual tricks to fool you into thinking you got something different.
It's to fool you into thinking you got a vehicle that handles worse.
Yeah.
You got body on frame. Psych! Unibody.
All right. And then finally, from Mr. Burns, he left a big, actually, it was actually three separate messages on Discord because it was so long. But he wanted to share some of his thoughts with us on the Kia EV3, which... supposedly the EV3 is still coming to the U.S. later this year. That's what Kia tells us. You know, we're not getting the EV4, although if you happen to live across the Detroit River in Canada, you can go to a Kia dealer in Canada and buy an EV4. But you cannot get them here in the U.S. But the EV3, Mr. Burns had a chance to drive it for a number of days when he rented one. And he got the EV3 Deluxe GT line. And he has a whole bunch of things that thoughts about this. Like the cargo room, unlike the Renault Clio Hybrid I had a year ago in the Netherlands, I was able to put a full-size roller suitcase with work-related gear in the back. Plenty of room left for colleagues, more efficient carry-on roller as well. Comfortable cockpit, Qi charging, and good big gulp friendly cup holders.
I like that analysis.
Yeah.
Big gulp friendly.
Long reach for the flat infotainment screen. So the car's compact, but I had to lean a bit to get to the right edge of things on the infotainment screen. From what I can tell, this would be the case in the EV9 as well.
Yeah, that little weird cover.
Yeah, it's. I think it's the same.
It's the steering wheel thing.
Yeah. Yeah, it's the same screen they've got on a bunch of vehicles, I think, including the... The K4, where you've got two 12-inch displays plus a little 4 or 5-inch display in the middle there that you can't see behind the steering wheel. See what else here.
That's such a weird placement. I did think about that in the K4. I'm like, why is this here? It's so hard to see.
Yeah,
it was weird in the EV9 when we drove it first time in Korea. We're like, well, this doesn't make sense. But then there's buttons for the climate control. I'm like, all right, fine. For the actual temperature, I'm like, eh. I never used
these. It's just
these.
A cute little spot to put that in, but you don't ever really need to use it, or you forget it's there because you can't see it.
Yeah, I just hit the auto button and then just go on with my life. I rarely like change the things unless it's,
Let's see what else. Left and right stocks, thankfully, have backups on screen while the steering wheel is blocking key controls. Let's see. WTF, EU, stop telling me to drink coffee. The EU's regulations for driver assist can kiss my fat American ass. I've never been more nannied in a car than I was in the EV3. Thankfully, I figured out how to mute the stupid speed limit warning indicator and turn off the mom is teaching me to drive lane intervention crap during adaptive cruise control.
Wait a minute, Mr. Burns, don't hold back next time, and please tell us how you really feel about all that nanny stuff.
I like that the Europeans are like, you know, we got really good coffee. Maybe you should have some.
You know.
Like, we know you're not tired, but
we
have
just
you
think
tried
you could
our
use
coffee?
A coffee, and there's a cappuccino right
just
there.
Pull over, grab a cappuccino, you know.
Have a nice piece of bread.
Some bread, a little bit of butter.
See.
A little bit of European bread.
The charging experience, once I figured out what I was doing, I charged at Circle K twice, once midweek and then near the airport before returning the car. First night, me and my colleague spent 45 minutes charging, recharging, and trying to unlock the charger plug at 400 kilowatt Circle K installation. We didn't know how to disconnect until some Dutch girl comes out to unplug her Peugeot. I would just lock and unlock the car. May I ask you another question? Have you seen the Circle K? Have you been in the Circle K for 45 minutes while charging your car next to ours? Yes. What in the hell have you been doing for 45 minutes at a Circle K?
Like, what do you get? Yeah, that's a lot of time at a Circle K. When I do my long drives, I have places that I stop that I know, because I know there's like a restaurant nearby or something.
Or a taco truck.
Or a taco truck. Yeah, something I can just kind of relax and like do a thing. Like Circle K, you're like, okay, I guess I'm going to get a really bad burrito, frozen burrito I'll throw in the microwave.
Performance was very nice. Car solid. Ran in eco driving mode during our northeastern offices didn't have many chargers available. And we learned that there are no Circle K's or SO's out that way. Even in eco mode, the car moved like it was fun. Not like Polestar 2 fun, but I think I could have been if I tried it in sport. So he liked the performance. Real vent and climate controls, somewhat confusing infotainment. It appears this car has the same layout for controls as the EV9. Yeah, we already talked about that.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
And in summary, great compact car and a first EV for a small family. Based on this week alone, I'm going to be begging my wife to at least try the EV9 for a test drive in lieu of having the roadside SO, OK, and Shell Plus, Shell EV chargers and gas stations on the main roads. I think we could do nicely with an adapter and a Tesla charging account. Speaking of which, I got between 90 kilowatts to 125 kilowatts charging with CCS2 connections at a 400 kilowatt charging station with the 400 volt architecture. So.
Okay.
So thank you for sharing all that, Mr. Burns.
Yeah.
I appreciate
that was cool.
It.
So you're going to copy and paste it and put it on a site. There, boom. Yeah. Car review.
Yeah, well, car review. Bam. Done.
It's all in the Discord. So you know, if you haven't checked out the Wheel Bearings Discord. All some interesting conversations going on in there. And with that, I think we will call it a show.
We're done, people.
All right. Talk to you next time.
Bye.
Bye.